And it is Sunday, 11 o'clock in the morning on Daylight Savings Time Day. So for anybody that's actually listening right now, good morning, because technically it's 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock in the morning is not a good time to talk about movies. And our guest today will be Christian Grillo from the movie Apocalypse Kiss. He's a writer, director, producer. Geez, what else has he done? Composer, set decorator. He was probably a coffee runner at one point or another. He'll be with us a little later. Hopefully he's not sweeping in or forgot to set his clock back. I believe they're having a DVD release party in Philadelphia. Well, right now, it's supposed to be released on April 8th, so maybe they're just doing a little early bird special for the big fans. Show must go on, and what we will be talking about today is pretty much science fiction. And Apocalypse Kiss wasn't a normal science fiction movie. We're not talking about huge-ass monsters roaming around Japan destroying buildings. We're not talking about Flash Gordon wearing a shirt that says Flash flying around in space attacking aliens. Science fiction movies can also be very serious. Unfortunately, that's just how it goes sometimes. You have books like 1984 by George Orwell, Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. All of these books can technically be science fiction because it's all about the future. And the scary future that, let's just say the dirty word, of politics. So that was one of the best things about Apocalypse Kiss. If you read the actual summary, it doesn't do it justice. We'll give you the official synopsis. Adrian, a serial killer with OCD, fights for his place in the media while two nomadic lesbians are getting the credit for his murders. Meanwhile, the world as they know it is about to come to an end. It's an action synopsis, I guess you could say. Or at least more action than the film actually was. And I'll just keep on using actually over and over again. It's one of those movies. When I first saw it, I the last real science fiction movie I remember watching was Melancholia. It was that movie about the end of the world, pretty much. Kiefer Sutherland running around. Kirsten Dunst. She had Melancholia. Oh, and we have somebody on the line, and I am guessing it is Christian Grillo.
Christian Grillo and Carmela Hazlett.
Christian.
Yes.
Hey, it's Patrick Emmel from Critics Den. How you doing?
Hi, how you doing? I'm on here with my wife, Carmela, as well.
Hey, how's it going, Carmela?
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's a little early. Did you guys set your clocks forward? Because I forgot to.
Yeah, we did.
You did? You lucked out? All right, good, good.
I did.
Well, somebody's got to be the responsible one, right?
Right.
Right.
All right, so tell me a little bit about this movie that, geez, we got to go through the tagline of Christian Grillo, writer, director, editor, cameraman, composer, set director. Did we have Coffee Runner in there too?
Yeah. Yeah, there's been plenty of times I've had to pick coffee up on the way.
Well, that's the way that indie films go, right?
Yeah, but we actually did have a dedicated person who took care of that most of the time.
Okay, good. But yeah, I mean, we've dealt with the basic synopsis, the press release. Adrian, a serial killer with OCD, fights for his place in the media while two nomadic lesbians are getting the credit for his murders. Meanwhile, the Earth is pretty much about to come to an end. What's your synopsis on this movie?
The one you just read.
Really?
See, actually, my wife Carmela writes all the synopsis for our films, which I don't like to write a synopsis for my own film because I just think it's, I don't know, it's hard to describe your own film. Directors always go too wordy into it.
Right, especially if you're the writer, you wrote the whole script, so to dumb it down to two or three sentences is going to be a little rough.
Yeah, it's hard to edit yourself.
No, I hear you. But, you know, I saw the film, and, you know, obviously the synopsis, you know, it tells it bluntly as it is. But I think there's a lot more going on behind the scenes with this film. There's a lot more thematic elements rather than the action.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, in a synopsis, we're always trying to consider how we're going to sell it.
Right.
You tell
so,
people too much.
You know,
confused.
Right. So we have the official synopsis, but can you give me a take on the theme synopsis of what you were going for? And we'll compare it to what I was thinking of, because we have a whole lot of stuff we can talk about on that.
It's all about that serial killer named Katya. It's all about her.
My take on it is it's sort of just a little poke as to, I think, where society's going. Not that I'm super analytical of, you know, politics or the world around me in the sense of you know, the news, because I don't even watch the news. I don't even think you need to anymore. You can see it living and breathing around you every day. But
right.
I wanted to sort of poke at the way we revolve around media, which is obviously Adrian's standpoint, him being so self-absorbed with himself and having, you know, a constant hover over what's going on in the news and how many times his name gets mentioned. I think that's a lot like us as people. You know, we have to gratify ourselves every day by constantly checking Facebook and who liked something we said or who commented on it. It's the truth. It's who we are as people today. We're very self-absorbed, which makes it harder to sell a movie or a product or tell people to come see your band, because if it's not about them, nobody seems to care about anything anymore. We're a very self-absorbed society, and it's been created through social media and social networking, and I think that's a little, you know, taste of where things will go if we continue to have this mentality. It'll destroy us. You know, people don't go outside as much anymore. They just explore the world through their computer and their television, and that's you know, pretty much Adrian's life. He goes to work, comes home, and he's sitting in front of that TV. You know, tell me about me. And you know, that part. This is why I don't write synopsis for my own film.
That was all about
Carmela wrapped it up. It's all about Katya. You know, and then Katya's character with Gladys represents the complete opposite side of that. And in all honesty, the heroes in my film are Gladys and Katya. I think they're the way we used to be. They're more animal-like, and it's just about surviving. Not so comfortable in our own skin, but just trying to live through a world and just by the necessary means. They kill just so they can eat and have a roof over their head till they have to leave and go to the next place. These are two extremes. But the overall standpoint that I had on Apocalypse Kiss was basically two different sets of love stories. You know, Katya's character being one who can't be loved, and Hipple and his wife, the detective that's trying to hunt down the Red Harvest killer, is a person who had love and lost it. So there is a lot going on in the movie. There's a lot of sub stories laying in there.
Yeah, definitely. Now you know, you were talking about. Oh, don't worry. We got a whole bunch more things that hopefully I'll blow your mind with some of these questions. But with Gladys and Katya, I was going through the you know, the characters, and it's interesting how, you know, there's a lot of parental guidance, I guess, almost like rebellion. You know, Adrian's, you know, talking to his mom, and he's out in, I believe it was Sector 4, is that the underground dwelling?
Or
is it Sector 8?
Sector, I think they were in Sector 7 is where they, you know what, it's terrible that I don't even know that. It's probably just a number I threw in there as I was coming up with it, and it's no, it wasn't really significant to me.
Yeah, I know. It only, I think it came up maybe twice in the movie, the actual number itself.
Yeah, it's like, all right, what number are they in? You know, it really wasn't, wasn't a major point.
I think they were blocks, like
Yeah, there were sectors and blocks, like everything's broken down to numbers. Basically, and you know, where we're going with that is nothing new. It's been done in science fiction before. It's just, you know, basically dehumanizing everybody. Everybody becomes numbers and where you live, not who you are.
Right. But with Adrian and his mom, and then you got, you know, right at the beginning, Plex with his mom in the same sector. It seems like, you know, the aristocrats want to, you know, kind of revel in the rabble, I guess you could say, you know, get down into where the real drama is going on. And then Gladys sounds as if she's right at the cusp of where, you know, Katya is, and then Adrian and Plex, because they do randomly mention her parents a couple times, of like, you know, they say, why don't you just go back to your parents?
Yeah,
I
mean,
Gladys that focus?
Yeah, Gladys is supposed to be from the Ritzy section, which is the West Sector. You know, the West Sector being the rich side and the East Sector being the poor side that's blockaded off. So obviously there's some type of transport that goes between the two places for people who are day workers and such. But somehow, at one point, Katya must have gotten into the West Sector, which could be a whole different story that we explore, and you know, sort of grappled in Gladys and brought her along with her to the poor side. But yeah, it's that's where the, you know, aristocratical, more, you know, well-to-do people would be from, at the West Sector.
Right. Now tell me about working with Lloyd Kaufman. Because when I saw him on the cast list, every time I see Lloyd, he seems to have this sort of, you know, campy demeanor about him, because he's usually in his own movies. So he's just like making, like, you know, little side jokes. But in this movie, as the president, he did a really good job. I mean, it was definitely a kind of a 1984-ish vibe when he's on that screen talking to the whole world while it's pretty much coming to an end. How did you decide to cast him for this role when it's so opposite of what he normally does?
Yeah, I think it was actually my wife's idea to cast Lloyd. Now, we're both big fans of Lloyd Kaufman and the work he's done. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, I'm a devout trauma movie fan and I have every trauma movie in my collection. A lot of them are crap. I mean, let's be honest. But what Lloyd Kaufman has done for independent cinema has inspired an entire generation to go out and do it. That man single-handedly showed you that you can do it with a low budget. I mean, since I was 10 years old, I was watching The Toxic Avenger, which today I think is one of the funniest movies on the face of the planet.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
The fact that just the style of his films, nobody can touch. His films are unlike anybody's. And, you know, he's created a fan base on his own that's unrivaled. You know, nobody has carried a fan base for more than 30 years like he has. So when she mentioned, hey, why don't, you know, who are we going to cast as the president? We always toss names around. We sit out on the front porch and say, who should we put in this role? Who should we go after for that role? And my wife, you know, made a suggestion of Lloyd Kaufman. I said, he's perfect. Who else could play the president of the United States better than Lloyd Kaufman? I love the fact of putting people in roles that you wouldn't expect them in. I like doing that in my films. I like to put people, you know, in a role where you go, what? And then you realize, whoa, they're really friggin' good at it.
There's a lot of trauma fans that want Lloyd Kaufman to be president.
I've seen it before. I said, you know what, Lloyd Kaufman, I've never seen him play a serious role, but reading his books and meeting him in person, I know there's a side of him that's sympathetic. And that goes hand in hand with playing a president. There has to be sympathy and empathy and understanding of the world around them in a person to play that role. And Lloyd Kaufman already possessed that. I knew that from talking to him multiple times, meeting him. And I said, you know what? I'm going to make that man the president of the United States. Like, he's perfect for it. And I, you know, we already had spoken to him plenty of times and had his contact information, and we just hit up his representatives and said, hey, we have a role for Lloyd Kaufman. I made a very fair offer so it would be taken seriously, and he took it.
Nice. Now, you say you like
to put... He came to the premiere screening, too.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
What was that, in Philly?
Awesome person. Yeah. Right outside of Philly. We showed it in Newtown, right outside of Philadelphia.
Okay. So you say you like to put people in different roles. So obviously with Lloyd Kaufman, did you try to get him to not wear a bow tie?
No. He said, you know, how do you want me to dress? And he had a picture, one of his press pictures. And I said, I want you to wear this suit and this bow tie. And he's like, all right, well, I still have it. I said, well, this is how I want you to look as my president.
Very cool. Now, with, you know, characters that normally aren't in their element, we also, on the opposite end, we have Michael Berryman. Now,
right.
You know, seen him in a bunch of great, great movies, but it's definitely, you know, a 180 to see him as kind of like the epitome of humanity, you know, the corporation that controls humanity when, you know, he's not exactly the perfect specimen of a human being. What was your idea on that?
Well, you've seen Donald Trump plenty of times.
That's true.
On TV, right? I really consider Donald Trump a good-looking man. He's kind of, when you look at that ridiculous hairpiece that man wears, that's more distracting than his ego. Now put the two together and tell me how far off basis I am.
Yeah, you're not far off base at all. So.
Right? Now, Michael Berryman, let me say, is one of the sweetest, nicest guys in the business. That is a nice man. And, you know, I love the fact that his appearance, you know, after you meet him, you forget all about his appearance, and his personality and charm comes through.
Once you actually start speaking, you're not scared of him?
No, not at all. Michael Berryman's a sweetheart. But I wanted to put Michael Berryman once again in a role that people didn't expect him in. Now, the role wasn't huge, and it was actually a little bit bigger than what you see in the film, but I just couldn't get everything in. We had so much more footage from Michael Berryman's shot that wasn't used, which is why we created that fake Horn Industries commercial that's on our YouTube page. There's probably more of him in that commercial than in the whole entire film. I don't know if you've gotten to see it, but it's on our YouTube page. It's him and Sharon Lentz from Dark Shadows, and we created one of those old ADT security commercials together.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see it yet, but I'll definitely check it out.
You got to check it out. It's funny. It's basically Michael Berryman green screened in like they were on the old ADT commercials, talking about the Horn Industries microwave home defense system. And Sharon Lentz from Dark Shadows is sitting in her home all cozy in a robe, and I'm breaking into the house, and I get zapped by this Horn Industries kinetic scan system.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. But,
there wasn't enough Michael Berryman, so we definitely have to watch that.
Yeah, but it's one of the DVD extras, so people will get to see it and realize that we actually did shoot more. There was supposed to be so much more of him in it, but, you know, what looks good on paper and what flows as a story doesn't always match up. And, you know, after I started creating these commercials and tried to shoehorn them into the movie, I'm like, this just slows things down. It's not working. And it's my fault, you know, because, you know, sometimes what we imagine on paper isn't always accurate.
Right. There's only so much time you can make a movie until people, you know, their brain starts wandering. Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, it's pretty much the whole RoboCop thing with I'll buy that for a dollar. It's, you know, there's goofy commercials, except it was more 1984 than anything. There can always be a part two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is true. Well, I mean, I guess not on
A
Earth
part
anyway.
zero.
We'll have to find another planet.
A prequel.
Yeah, a prequel. Now, I want to get your take on the actual influences for this movie because, you know, I saw, you know, the tagline of Blade Runner meets Sin City, you know, but I have a different take. I was thinking more of like Blade Runner meets Roman Polanski's Chinatown.
Okay,
what,
yeah, I could see that.
Just playing with that film noir, you really use that well. You know,
thank
it comes,
you.
It's not exactly a mystery, but it's, you know, it just has that dark element that, you know, films like Chinatown had. But what, you know, I'm saying what your influences are. What were your influences in this movie?
That's straight out of Blade Runner. I love Blade Runner. I think it's a great looking movie. I'm not the biggest fan of the delivery of the film, not to discredit Ridley Scott, but
mm-hmm.
the movie itself is a major undertaking, what they did, creating that world that felt real to us. Even going back and watching it now, it still feels real. It doesn't come off as being cheesy.
Yeah.
So seeing that whole noir, Dark City, another one, sort of had that future noir feel to it. Well, it's another
okay,
underrated
yeah.
film.
Hardware.
Hardware didn't so much have the noir thing, the same style, but it was a noir.
No, but the guy who directed it.
Richard Stanley.
Richard Stanley. Christian has a very Richard Stanley form of filmmaking. Richard Stanley directed the film Hardware from 1990. And Chris drew a lot of inspiration from that, not just the movie, but from the director himself.
Yeah, Richard Stanley did. Major, major accomplishment for what he did in 1990 with Hardware, another underrated film. Not so much in the detective noir style, but it is a colorful noir in its own right.
So it had the same atmosphere that Apocalypse Kiss did, where
yeah.
there was this hopeless and depressed economy that was actually like a character in the movie. The atmosphere was its own character, and that's what it's like in Hardware.
Absolutely.
Right.
But yeah, just I would say it was a collage of those films with their noir sense, and I've seen enough movies that have that noir detective that does the narrative. But, I mean, I'm sure I'll be accused of stealing it right out of Blade Runner.
Yeah, that one scene with Hipple and Adrian,
yeah.
you know, at the door. I mean,
mm-hmm.
did you just say, I want that scene in my movie? or just, did it just accidentally happen?
No, I'm sort of missing what you're asking. I mean, it was written from Jump Street. Wait. I'm not
oh,
what was the actual question.
Yeah, in Apocalypse Kiss at the end, we have Hipple and Adrian. Yeah, the showdown. It looks just like Roy Batty and Deckard when they're between the wall. It's not exactly the same thing happens,
I know
obviously,
what you're talking
but
about. Very similar. You know what? I never even put that together, to be honest with you. I know what scene you're talking about when he's chasing them through that large hotel that's all dripping with water.
Right.
No, actually, no. I wanted to do something that was very comic book looking, which is why when you see him walk down the hallway and you hear the little bit of the Western tinge go to it with the little rattlesnake sound, him coming down the hallway, you know it's going to be a showdown. I'm spelling it out for you, where he's all silhouetted in the hallway.
Right.
A lot of comic books have that look of where you see somebody on both sides of that false wall, where you can see them talking to each other at the same time. And I always
okay.
sort of wanted to do a – I always wanted to do a false wall shot, to be honest with you, and that's why I wrote it the way it was, to where they were constantly exchanging dialogue. What's interesting about that final scene is it got rewritten up until the time of shooting it.
By the actors.
By the actors. I sort of got hijacked with that scene. That scene, if I could send you the original script compared to the rewritten script, compared to the final script, compared to the actual dialogue script of that final day, it went from it just being Hipple and Adrian to it being Hipple, Adrian, and Katya. Then it turned into Katya and Adrian having a gun battle, and then it turned into not them. There were so many culminations of that scene. It got to a point where I was just sitting there listening to Carmella and DC Douglas exchange ideas. And I said, you know what? It's going to work better if it sort of happens like this, because it's supposed to be a somewhat chaotic scene. Let's let chaos happen. And it was the first time. Now, that was my fourth feature film, Apocalypse Kiss. It was the first time I ever in my life gave up that much control and just said, guys, I'm going to shoot. You know where I want your marks. Make it happen. This all sounds good to me as we're talking, but I don't even know how I could write that down. So you guys just do what you're talking about, and I'll film it. And it's one of the best scenes I've ever shot in my life.
It was the most. It was definitely the most powerful scene, and kind of be right at the end.
Yeah,
except you know, with everybody else, the end of the world scenario was actually really cool too, though. With everybody, you know, how they're reacting
on top of the cake.
Right.
I mean, the real end to the movie is when Adrian dies, obviously.
Yeah, because the media frenzy is over, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole point. You know, then I just wrap it up with, yeah, and we are going to end the world. Good night.
All right, I want to do a real quick question before we do a wrap-up. Why did you decide to show Plex's penis? Right at the beginning, it's like all of a sudden it's there, and I'm like, okay.
But believe it or not, Plex is actually here with us right now.
I don't know why he decided to do that. None of us wanted him to do that.
Wait, Plex did it himself, or Christian? You decided
no,
just
Christian,
to keep it in there.
Christian wanted that to happen. Nobody else on the set wanted that to happen. So I have, like, these insecurities about my husband's sexuality.
What you're
it was, like, right at the top
movie.
Of the list. I need dick in the movie.
There's got to be a dick. Well, one of the things that I've gotten known for since my last film, Deer Crossing, is sort of pissing off my audience. Which is another homage to the godfather of independent cinema, Lloyd Kaufman. There's something inside of me and Uncle Lloyd that is probably self-destructive. We like to piss off our own fans.
And
our cast and crew, which if you read any of Lloyd's books, you'll see that there's been many a times his cast and crew said, "What the fuck are you doing?" And I guess there's part of that inside of me because I love that about Lloyd, that he just does not give a shit. I like the fact that when I'm watching, and we're having a DVD release party tonight at the TLA Theater on South Street in Philadelphia. One of my biggest things that I cannot wait to see is people's reactions to that opening scene when he says, "Let's turn his party up a notch," and he opens that robe up. In all his glory.
He already got a reaction at the first screening. Everybody went, "Oh," when the penis was shown, and then Katya takes Gladys's jacket off, and you see her breasts, and everybody starts clapping.
Yeah, yeah. It really does get a great reaction because it's like the shock and awe. You get the shock of the penis. You get the awe of Tammy's breast.
So you guys are doing a release today, and then the actual real release is on the 8th, right? Or
yeah, we're doing a DVD release party at the TLA Theater, which is on South Street today. It starts at 5 o'clock. There's going to be like 5 bands playing. One of them is the band that's featured in the movie, Travia. They're the band that you hear at the end credits that kicks in. And then we're showing the movie, and we have like a limited run of DVDs that are out before the actual release. So it's a pretty big event. The TLA Theater is a pretty well-known theater in Philadelphia. It's right in the heart of one of their biggest districts down there. It comes out next month, April 8th, and it'll be on all the on-demand cable providers across the U.S.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, you and Carmella, thanks for chatting with me.
Thank you.
And, I enjoyed the movie, and I hope everybody gets as deep a meaning out of it as I did.
Thank you. I hope
and
so
also have fun with it. As also,
yeah,
it is a fun
movie. It is
movie.
A fun movie. Thank you.
Even if there's penis in it, because there's titty in it too.
Yeah. Hey, there's a demographic for that.
Actually,
that's true. That's true.
Get them to not want to watch the movie too.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Christian. Be good.
All right. See you.
And there you have it. Apocalypse Kiss will be released on April 8th. Special thanks to Christian Grillo and his wife Carmela for speaking to me about the movie. If this interview didn't get you interested in the movie, I don't know what will. This is Patrick Emmel at the Critics' Den, still without a sign-off catchphrase. Later.